Greetings. This is Chris Yarder, Chair of the Environmental Services Advisory Committee. And we heard that there's a day that's set aside especially for the Waste and Recycling Workers Week. And we just wanted to tell you how much we appreciate your hard work and how we count on you to keep Tucson clean and safe. And we have other members of the Environmental Services Advisory Committee here. Margo, did you want to say something?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for all your hard work.
Okay. And Trevor?
And I'll echo Margo and say thank you all for all that you do for the city of Tucson.
Okay. And Fred?
Yes, we all understand the difficult tasks you guys ahead of you every day of the week. You guys come through. I mean, that's about the best we can say, and that's all we can ask of you. And we're so proud of the way you've been able to take care of our city and everybody here. So, kudos to all you guys.
Right. And Doug.
Yes, it's a special thank you to all the guys and gals that have the boots on the ground out there, getting the job done. Hats off to you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. And we know you get up really early and you work really hard all day. So we just want you to know that we appreciate you. We got your backs and we hope you keep getting new trucks. So we're working on
Sorry for
that.
new trucks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay.
Are we done?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, we're done. All right. And you can just edit the end of it, right?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and just crop out that first clip and hit, give that to Alyssa, and she can do something with it.
And edit. Okay, cool. Thanks. I wanted to, it kind of looks like the Hollywood Squares and stuff, and I knew it'd be too late if we waited for full ESAC. So, and Fred wanted to do like this Dylan thing where we put stuff on posters and so anyways, I'll quit screwing around. All right. Okay. We have a quorum. It's 3:05, and I'd like to bring the Environmental Services Advisory Committee's Waste Diversion Collections and Education Subcommittee to order. And item one, roll call. Fred Ariza.
Here, here,
Margo Garcia.
here,
Doug Jennings.
here,
And Trevor Ledbetter.
here.
Okay. And I don't have a chairperson's report. I was just going to say we needed to give a shout out to the workers. And so let's see for you. Oh, Trevor.
Trevor. How did it go, Trevor?
How were those children? Here's item three, U of A update from Trevor.
Can you all hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I usually have an external microphone.
Oops, you are cutting out a little bit.
Is this better?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
I have an external microphone and I left it in our building somewhere, so still okay?
That's fine. That's good.
Great. Okay. Let's see. So Dodge the Dumpster. Again, this year, Housing and Residential Life worked with suburban miners to take a lot of the reusable things that could be dropped off and resold. So we had collection points set up in most of the dorms on campus, all the ones over on Highland, a few in our historic district, almost all the ones over in the Park District, minus our graduate dorm, and then also up in our Honors Village on the north side of campus. We don't have full numbers yet. It'll take a while for us to get those from Waste Management, who is the primary hauler for U of A. But we did get some preliminary numbers from the campus pantry. We diverted about 2,000, a little more than 2,000 pounds of reusable or still usable food from all of the dorms. In terms of what we sort of saw on the ground, it seems like things went relatively well, a little bit better than last year in terms of the volume of things that we were seeing, the quality of the items we were seeing, and the lack of things going missing. So I think I've shared in previous years that a lot of the bins that we use for collection tend to walk off. So last year we actually had to start spray painting belongs to the University of Arizona and the Office of Sustainability, as well as Campus Pantry, on a few run quite a few things. I think we lost one bin this year, which is down considerably. The Office of Sustainability lost one bin, and I think Campus Pantry may have lost one bin, but not as bad as previous years, which was good. Other than that, we'll have to wait and see what the numbers are. Hopefully, we'll get those within the next month or two, and I can share that then too.
Thank you. Well, that's better news.
Yeah, we'll see what the numbers show, but on the whole,
So it seemed less chaotic, you're saying?
it seems less chaotic. I didn't hear a whole lot of reports from our partners in housing and residential life about things overflowing or anything like that. So seemingly not too bad. If I hear anything differently, I'll definitely let everyone know when I update once I have those numbers.
And do you think that the students are getting more the hang of it, that you're getting people who are doing this now for the second and third years?
I mean, we've been doing this in some capacity for almost 10 years at this point. I think the biggest challenge we have is what we always talk about with students is they're only in the dorms by and large for a year and then they're out. So for most students, that opportunity to divert stuff that they would otherwise throw away is a one-time thing. And they don't do it again the next year because that level of opportunity doesn't exist in off-campus housing most of the time. I don't know what the stat is this year, but typically around 80 to 90% of our students are freshmen. So they're in the dorm for their first year and then they go and live in off-campus housing most of the time. I do know that that number has been increasing slightly given the increase in rent and housing prices broadly in Tucson in recent years. But it's still the vast majority of our first year students who will do this once and then
I was hopeful.
leave. Yeah. We're still trying. We still have a lot of outreach and other sorts of things. And I think we have better communication throughout the period leading up to move out. But things get hectic. Students don't prepare great, even though they know it's coming, and it becomes a mad dash to get out, especially once your parents are here and they're like, why haven't you packed anything? So
Which they probably hadn't. Yeah. Oh boy. Okay. Thank you.
you think it's mostly just their age and their just immaturity as far as, you know, they're away from home for the first time and they're just kind of not really preparing themselves like they should as as young adults. Is that more or less what it is?
Yeah, I think so. And we do have a large proportion of out of state students, both domestic and international. And a lot of those students tend to come from wealthier backgrounds and have a different view on waste than others, putting it diplomatically.
Is there a way to get like sophomores to talk to them, or is it?
I mean, that comes through with our resident assistants. So all of our resident assistants are students who have lived in the dorms before, and have signed up to manage between, I think it's between 10 and 40 freshmen in most cases. And we have integrated into the move out process with resident assistants. Or the way the process move out process works is all resident assistants have to have at least one wing meeting with all of the residents on their floor or in their area. And they have to walk through like a checkout list and how move out is supposed to go. And we've integrated into that process. Like you can divert your waste by putting it in the lobby. There, you know, you can put your hard goods there. You can put food products that are unopened, that sort of stuff. And it's still difficult to get that message across.
Have you guys thought about like videotaping this thing and then showing them what it could look like if they're not prepared?
That's a good question. I don't think we have tried that. So
And
that is
maybe
something.
something like that, showing the confusion and everything, and it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah.
And maybe that will, it will alleviate a lot of hassle on everybody's part, not just the students, but the parents as well, and maybe show the parents the video and just say, this is what you can expect if you're not prepared for this,
Totally.
because when you get all those kids that are just aching to get out of there,
Yeah.
it could be hectic.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's something that I'll definitely bring up with our partners in housing. We have found video to be a much more effective medium for this generation, for engaging with them and getting them to pay attention. So that's something that we can definitely look into for next year.
Yeah, we're on video too right now.
Yeah, we didn't grow up with this, so that's for sure. It took me a while. All right, thank you.
Of
Let's
course.
move along to landfill and compliance. And Frank, you're out.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me
Yes.
well?
Yes.
Is it a lot better than the last time?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Your door closed?
What was that?
Is your door closed?
Yeah, I have it closed, but I think I had my computer, my laptop closed. And it was using the microphone from it. So I'm trying something a little different. Hopefully this works better.
Oh, this is great because sometimes it would be kind of garbled. So this is good. Yeah.
Okay, great. So the first item that I have.
Oh, landfill gas collections update.
Yes, okay. There isn't a whole lot for me to update. We're still working on our landfill gas utilization project. We are still working with one of the contractors, one of the top three contractors. So we're negotiating some terms. What we're looking at currently is, and I'll just do a quick update. Our plan is to recover our landfill gas, clean it up to hopefully pipeline quality, and then inject it into one of the regional pipelines, which more than likely the only one that we would be able to do that would be through Southwest Gas. So we're working through that process, of course, because it is going to take quite a bit of time before we actually have a project, a facility constructed, up to 2 years once we have that final agreement in place. So we're working also with the same company to look at an alternative to do something immediately or within those 2 years so that we don't have that lag in just waiting until we have a system and continue to flaring the gas. So more of an intermediate project that we can institute hopefully within 6 to 8 months of once we sign some sort of an agreement. What we're facing right now is that based on the condition of our current extraction system, gas collection extraction system, is that we're not at a point where we can guarantee the contractor that we can supply them the 2,400 standard cubic feet of flow of landfill gas. And so the first thing that's going to happen is that we're going to do an analysis of a gas collection system and to see if we can actually get to that second part of the contract. So that's the first thing that's happening. We're negotiating that. I think we're close to something that we can finally reach agreement on, and then we can start that field evaluation. Along with that, we know that we're going to have to do some upgrades to our gas collection system so that we can produce the amount and quality of gas that they are required, that they require to be able to build and construct this landfill gas collection and cleanup system. That's kind of where we are at in a nutshell. Does anyone have any questions?
You were saying you're trying to negotiate what? That the
We're trying to negotiate a contract. And the first part of it is to do a system-wide evaluation to ensure that we can produce the required flow of landfill gas and the quality.
I've got a question on the quality. What,
Yes.
how far off the mark are we? Or what do you need to get out? Is it moisture or?
No, so the quality is that we need to ensure that we have at least 50% of methane in our landfill gas.
Oh, okay.
And so it varies right now from extraction well to extraction well. We have some extraction wells that are producing well over 50%, up in the 56, 58% methane. And we have some wells that are lower than that. So overall, it's okay to have this fluctuation, but at the flare system, we need to ensure that that flow is going to be at 50% so that they can
50%,
act
50% methane in there. Gotcha.
50% methane, correct.
Okay.
And
I
so
get it.
that's part of what the evaluation is going to be, or what we're looking at, the analysis for. We're looking at each extraction well, ensuring that they're all in good condition. If they need any kind of repairs, we'll do that. But we're also looking at an overall system overhaul where we may have to add additional extraction wells. We don't know exactly yet where they're going to be placed, but the goal is to be able to reach to 2400 SCFMs.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Thanks.
What does the sort of long term, I mean, we're continuing to add material to this landfill, so we're not just going to get, we're at this level and we're going to cascade down as the decomposition finishes off. Is there some sort of projection about the length of time this contract is for?
Yeah, so once we reach an agreement for the full cleanup system, we're looking at a 20-year contract more than likely. And those are usually the terms of these long-term contracts. From previous evaluation, we've already shown that from the models, the LandGen model, is that the generation of landfill gas, it will actually increase over the next 50 years. Just because we're continuing to add material into the landfill. And those projections actually took into account a lot of the diversion efforts that we are envisioning are going to happen by pulling out organics. For example, food waste and green waste from the landfill stream.
And when you do that, that lowers your methane percentage, right? So I would imagine with more green waste and more food waste, you're going to generate stronger methane.
Well, we would generate not necessarily stronger methane, but we would continue to generate landfill gas. But the model has shown that even with us pulling and diverting a lot of those organics, it's still the the quality and
And the
the amount
percentage
of landfill gas
is still up there, huh?
Continues to increase.
Interesting.
Right. So at least for the next 50 years. And then after that, I'm sure it will more than likely taper down. But it just depends. And it just for the life of the landfill. And we're adding new cells. We have to add new cells. So those, as those come into in line into the operation and we start extracting from those areas, we already added three. I think I mentioned this at the last meeting. We added three extraction wells in cell 4A. And so we're working through those and getting the flows, optimal flows out of those three extraction wells.
Any other questions for Frank? Okay, thank you. Let's move on to the Kinder Morgan update.
Okay. I will share my screen and show you.
I did make you a co-host.
There we go.
Oh, okay, yeah, you're accepted.
I'm trying to find the button. Can you all see that now?
Mm-mm. There it is.
Okay. Just a very quick background. Most of you are aware that the Silvercroft pipeline spill, the Silvercroft contamination, was a result of the Kinder Morgan pipeline that bursted and contaminated the groundwater in this area, which is very close to the Silver Bell landfill. So the concern has always been, would some of this contamination commingle with the Silver Bell landfill plume that we are also cleaning up, which is from the old Silver Bell landfill that the city owns. And we currently have a pump and treat system. We call the groundwater extraction system, GETS. So this one here that you're looking at is the Silvercroft boom. And what they're doing right now is, let's see if I can, you see this, these kind of little circles here that almost look like pineapples. That's where they set up a sparging system, which is, it's basically air that's being injected into the groundwater in this area. And they form a curtain basically that prevents the MTBE plume from moving further north. And then of course, and then it would be preventing it from reaching our contamination plume from Silver Bell. It has been effective. It has basically stopped the plume from moving. And the air helps the microbes break down the MTBE as well. And so they are very confident, and they've actually reported, they keep reporting that the levels are stable. And MTBE is being decomposed at that point. The red one, I believe, is benzene. I need to look quickly here. Mm-hmm. But and that one as well is being contained. They continue, they have an order from ADEQ. It's actually a voluntary cleanup that they are in the process of conducting this work. And you can see the water flows, which are these, the blue lines, and that's the water, the groundwater flow, basically. But other than that, it's going to continue for some time until they feel and they reach a point where ADEQ is satisfied that they can stop doing this remediation project, air sparging project. They already have clearance on the soil contamination from the actual breakage of the pipeline. That's been remediated, and they already have no further action for the soil. And all they're working on is right now is just the groundwater pump. I can answer any questions that you might have.
So we see some other colored spots, purple and some yellow ones down towards the bottom of the map. Are those the yellow ones down at the bottom part of the map? Are those wells where they're sampling to see what the contamination levels are, or what are those? I mean, I can't
Yes.
see it very well, but it shows I can see toluene, ethylene, xylene, MTBE, et cetera, TCE, PCE.
Are the purple ones, for example?
No, those are the yellow ones that are just kind of like on my computer about 2 inches up from the bottom of the picture.
On the bottom, correct. So these are all monitoring wells as well.
Monitoring wells, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And this is where they do quarterly, semi-annual sampling.
And then the
so
purple.
You see, okay, the purples would be the same. Those would also be monitoring wells. Most of these are from the Silverbell, from our network, but they sample those as well.
Okay, because those show very different. One of them shows toluene, ethylene, MTBE, MTBE, so forth. But a lot of the purple ones only show, I'm not sure what NS and NM stand for.
Well, if you look at this orange one here,
yeah,
where R122A,
yeah,
you can see that all the levels are below
mm-hmm.
the regulatory limits. They're less than one, less than one, less than five.
Yeah, okay.
The groundwater level, GWL, that's what's that, 2134?
Four, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Benzene is less than one.
Mm-hmm.
NS would be not sampled, so they didn't sample some of these.
Okay.
And then towards the bottom as well, you can see levels like TCE, PCE levels, say like MW26 at the bottom. Here where I have my screen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So these are less than one, less than one. So they have no detects there. MTB is 1.3. But of course, these are also, they're upstream from the sparge system. So you are still going to see some detections. But these detections, well, they're a lot lower.
Mm-hmm.
The highest one is where you see the delineation of this plume here.
The green line. Okay.
The green line.
That's an isometric of the plume. And is the red higher or lower? Let's see, red.
Usually they're supposed to be here.
Yeah, MTBE at the red at 430A. MTBE is 480, 455, 485. Okay.
This one here.
Yeah, that's pretty high.
485.
Yep.
And that's right inside
the red.
Right. It's inside the red, but basically it's inside the green. The red delineates benzene.
Oh, okay. And the green is?
And the green, right. So the highest benzene is within the green delineation.
Okay.
So how close are they going to let housing development get to this property? Is everything as close as it's able to get, or do you think there's some developers chomping at the bit for some of this?
Well, all of this property is the closed landfill.
Yeah.
And so that's not going to be developed, and not,
Never. Okay.
at least not residential. This property, I just adjacent to the landfill, is currently being de fully developed with homes.
Like, okay. I wondered. It looked like it was getting
Right.
ready.
But we have all of these homes already out here.
Yeah.
And they're pretty close.
They're pretty close. Yeah. Okay.
But the biggest issue is groundwater. So that's not a concern. It's groundwater within this area is not being
Sure.
pumped for
Yeah.
potable water. Tucson
Okay.
Water has already closed all the production wells that are in this area.
Okay. All right. Any questions? All right. Let's move on to the closed landfill update.
Okay. I wasn't sure exactly what you were looking for as far as closed landfills go, but I can tell you that we have 16 closed landfills throughout the city that we still maintain as part of our environmental services compliance unit, which is basically housed under the landfill now. You recall it a few months ago, we mentioned that general services and environmental services were actually split into two separate departments. The compliance requirements were also split, with environmental services basically keeping all the compliance for the closed landfills and for Los Reales. So we still maintain all the compliance and the operation and maintenance of our closed landfills. We have Silver Bell Landfill, which has a pump and treat system for TC and PC. Los Reales, we also have, it's not a closed landfill, but we also have a pump and treat system, which is again for PC and TCE. We have Harrison Road Landfill, which also has some groundwater contamination. That one for some time also had a groundwater treatment system. Because our levels reached below detection levels, we stopped that pump and treat system. We are currently evaluating where we're at because we're seeing a few spikes. And so we're in the process where we're monitoring closely. And then, depending on what we see, we're already in contact with Arizona Department of Environmental Quality for that site to figure out what our next steps are going to be. And
Okay.
so Harrison Road Landfill, that's kind of what we're looking at. Right next to Harrison Road, we've got the Irvington Road Landfill. We've never seen any contamination there, but we still have to monitor groundwater and we still have to maintain the cap. We have the Vincent Mullins landfill, which is roughly around Speedway and Colb area, which is right next to the Speedway landfill, which is a private landfill.
Right.
We still have some oversight of the Speedway landfill as far as the landfill gas mitigation, because sometimes years ago, Tucson Water had a break in one of their water lines and a lot of that water entered the Speedway landfill. And so there's a court order where the city is responsible to control that landfill gas. And so we have a flare at Vincent Speedway landfill where we control the landfill gas. What other landfills of significance, well, that we have, those are the main ones that have issues that we maintain. Of course, we have along the Santa Cruz River, we've got Cottonwood Landfill. It's an old closed landfill. We've got the Ryland Landfill. We've got Mission Landfill. We've got A Mountain. Most of those, and like you know, most of the landfills in the past were built right along the rivers, which is an issue when you deal with groundwater contamination. But this is something that happened, and we just basically keep going. Along the Pantano River, we also have the Prudence Landfill, which is another closed landfill. And so I think I, oh, and then we also have Tumamoc, which is at the on the back of the base of the Tumamoc Hill. And that landfill, we haven't seen an issue on groundwater contamination. But all of these landfills, we continue to monitor the groundwater in case we ever see an issue, and the landfill gas. And of course, we also maintain the perimeters, the fencing, signage to keep people out of these closed landfills.
Hey, thanks. I remember going to Silver Bell back in the day. I remember going to the Silver Bell landfill back in the day. When did it close up? You know?
I'd have to look at the record.
Oh, back. That's okay. That's all right.
I have that at the tip of my head. My tongue.
It would have been in the early 70s, because that's when we suggested that it should become a golf course.
Oh, okay. All right.
That was me that did that.
Oh, you're such a troublemaker. No, good call, Margo. Good call.
Isn't there another one off of Ina Road somewhere?
On Ina. Not a city landfill. You're probably thinking that was the Camino del Cerro.
That's what it is. Yeah.
That was a Pima County.
I remember when we remodeled Pima College, I had to haul all the debris up north to Ina Road.
Mm-hmm. Pima County owns that one.
Okay.
And I believe there is groundwater contamination, but I am not fully aware of exactly what Pima County is doing with that one. There are many others throughout the region, closed landfills too. Of course, we've got Tangerine Landfill, but that's also Pima County. And then there's some smaller private ones.
Why is it that we don't follow what they're up to?
Because they're not within the city limits.
Well, no, just so we know if what's going on with them as well. I mean, just to keep track of an overall track of what's going on with the all these old sites. You guys don't share any information about it, or
we haven't had the need to it as far as from the city's perspective.
Okay.
But the information is there, and if we needed to look into something, we could.
Okay.
Okay, let's move on. Thank you.
I think Brittany just shared a map, and you can kind of see where all.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Sorry, I was looking for it, so it took me a minute. But and this is an old map too, so.
That's fine.
They're old landfills.
Yeah. Cool.
So. Yes.
I think I covered all of them off the top of my head.
That's pretty, good.
Oh, except for Congress Road Landfill.
Oh, the Congress is that's a big one.
Yeah.
Miramont and Congress, we excavated. There's always some slivers of waste there in place, but most of it has been removed.
Okay.
And then Rio Nuevo, North Landfill too. That's over there by the city has the HCD has some offices out there on Bonita and Commerce Center Loop.
Okay. Oh, cool. Thanks for the map, Brittany.
Okay.
All right.
Wow, there's so many of them.
I'll drop it in the chat. You guys can download it from there, or if you want me to email it. But for old time members, you've seen this before.
Yeah, probably. Okay.
Wow, there's a lot of them.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Plenty of them.
Davis Monthan had their own landfill.
What was your question?
Davis Monthan had their own landfill.
Davis Monthan, no. I don't think they have a landfill. They just have some soil contamination.
Mm-hmm.
DOD landfill does show like maybe they did have one. the brown.
Because when they built the runways and everything, they had there were there was always talk about them, you know, needing some space for that.
Okay.
All right, now we really have to move on. Thank you, Fred.
Barbara, thank
That's
you all so
right.
much.
Jose, you're here, right? For
Yes, I am. Yeah.
collections.
How's everybody doing today?
Good.
Good.
I'll try to go as quick as I can. I know
Yeah.
on our last meeting, you guys were concerned, or you guys were asking about the cost of the INRC sites. If I can share my screen real quick.
One step ahead of you.
Okay, gotcha. Are you guys able to see this?
Maybe
Kind of
a little bit.
small.
All right, let me see.
There. Well, that might.
So we
Okay.
do have, can you see that?
We
Yeah.
it goes okay, Ward 1 to Los Reales is what we're saying.
Okay, Ward 1. Okay, so these are where we have the NRC sites. This is where they're located. Ward 1 on Mission Road, you know, Ward 2 over on Broadway. Basically, what I have on here on the quantity is we got 5 8-yard recycled containers that we have out there. You know, and this is at Ward 1. We have one with a 30-yard roll-off plastic. That's going to be the orange container that we have out there. So we have Ward 2, you know, with the 8 yarders. That's a recycling glass roll-off. So you guys can kind of see, you know, what we have out there. We also do have the glass at Ward 6. We have the 130-yard glass roll-off. And then at Los Reales, we do have the 8-yard, you know, 2 8-yarders, and then we have 2 30-yard recycle roll-off, and then with the plastic. And if you look on to the right, the ones that are highlighted in yellow, so the first one where it says on Mission, we have at the Mission Road, we have a one glass. It's a small 4-yard. It's those purple containers. And then Park Avenue is going to be Ward 5. We have another glass, 4-yard glass over here, and Los Reales has a 4-yard glass. So we went and I took all the information, everything that we had, and I got with their sales, and basically we looked at what is the cost, you know, to service the all the NRCs. So we broke it down to, let me see if I can scoot this over. I'll kind of give you a picture of it. So we have a, you know, we have all the ward offices are here on the side. You know, this is then we have it broken down as a commingle, which is a recycling glass roll-off plastic. So we're gonna go with Ward 2. You know, it's costing the city of Tucson $822. Basically, that's how much it's costing per month to service that location. So when you add everything up, you know, for the total month is 2402
Jose,
to service, yeah, to service on the recycling. Go ahead.
are you showing financial figures?
Yeah, I don't know if you can see it. Can you see that or no?
No, we're
No,
still off
we're not seeing
that.
them.
How about now? No?
No.
Okay, hold on. Let me share again. Sorry about that.
No
I thought I
worries.
could just swing it by on there. Hold on.
There we go.
Can you
Oh, yeah.
see that now? Okay. Sorry about that. I thought I can just move stuff over and you guys would be able to see it. So, like I was saying, on the ward, these are the ward offices that we have here. And we're just gonna go by Ward 2. Ward 2 is costing the city, you know, it's costing us $822. That's where a monthly. So if we add everything up, you know, per ward office, a monthly is 2402. And yearly 28,824 for us to service the NRCs, and that's just the recycling containers. Now, if you go to the rollouts, that's going to be the glass rollouts that we have out there. Same thing, we got the ward offices, and we got one we service. It's they got 1 30-yard container out there that we service twice a week, which, you know, monthly it's 1144. And then we have 2 4-yarders that basically added everything that they have there that we're servicing.
when it comes down to it, and that's just for the glass. We do 1992 monthly and 23,104 yearly to service the glass, and that's for all the NRCs. I'm including all the NRCs, and then same thing with the plastic. Go ahead.
Why does the War II office cost so much?
On the War II, that would be, which one are we looking at? The
Broadway. I was just there this morning. I was just kind of curious.
Yeah, so because the War II has eight yarders out there. If you see when you went out there, I mean, we have eight containers that are out there.
Yeah.
Now, when you go to, you know, we're just going to say Ward 5, they only have five containers. If you look at, you know, we have eight yarders, then times, it's just saying that we have eight containers that are out there.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. Same thing with all the other Ward Office 5, you know, and this is the recycling, the blue ones that you see out there. That's the recycling. They have eight of them out there. And then, I mean, it's a pretty big area out there. And then, you know, we've been servicing those containers. So what's that? I was, 822.
I was dropping off some glass this morning.
Oh, were you? Oh, okay. Yeah, see, for the glass, you went out there and dropped off the glass. We have it on here. Where's that? You know, that one, it's the glass here. So we service it once a week, which is 572 monthly. That's what we're in order for us to service that that glass out there.
Okay.
So when you add all the yearlies here together, this is what we're spending a year, plus 9,500, and that's not including that's something that I meant to include also is with the employees, you know, sending the truck out there, sending the employees out there. But I kind of give you guys a ball ideas, you know, what it is costing, you know, for to service those NRCs, and that's going to be all five locations.
Okay.
Well, they're going to have a meeting at Ward 6, right? I forget the date.
Next week.
Yeah, next week. I know I'm not going to be able to go because I'm not walking yet. But anyways, I'll be curious to hear how that goes.
Yeah.
Because they're moving the area. But I wanted to go back to that table to show how often some of those are picked up. I mean, it looked like it was picked up six times a week.
And that's what it is. We're servicing them, you know, those NRC sites, we're servicing them every day.
Two.
When it comes to the recycling,
two, five, 15, Los Reales, three, and Ward 6, four times.
Yeah. When you're getting all the illegal dumping too, yes. That you guys are cleaning. Yeah, because you guys are cleaning that stuff up that's not in the containers.
Yes. Yeah. Whatever's left behind, you know, where we're picking up mattresses, we are sending people out there on Monday, especially on Mondays or after a holiday. That's what we see the most. So we're sending people out there on Monday just to, you know, help out. We do have Beacon that goes out there and, you know, they're helping us out clean up some of these NRC sites. But, you know, they can only do so much. So we'll send our crews out there, you know, to pick up all the illegal dump that's being left out there.
Okay.
Speaking of illegal dumping, I was just reading an article about the use of AI and and cameras and being able to watch people do illegal dumping and then have a voice come on and say, stop, that is illegal dumping. Do not leave that mattress here. I just thought that was a fascinating concept. To see if it would do any good. I don't know. But apparently it was successful in some other places. They're starting to use it.
Yeah, you know that we were looking into that, or we're still looking into that. We're trying to see the pricing, you know, what that's gonna cost. But you're right, you know, there are cameras out there. You know, if you go to Walmart or if you go to a Circle K, they have them out there sometimes, you know, and they you know, as soon as you get close to them, it starts giving notifications. You know, we have people come down and actually show us what the capabilities are, what they can do. You know, I mean, right now with AI, they're able to distinguish, you know, because they were even showing us, like, say you come, you're wearing that green shirt, Margo, and they'll say, hey, you with the green shirt, you got to stay away. You know, it detects all that stuff.
Yeah, because that's the only way you're going to get people to respond to that. Because if you say, hey, you driving the, you and the, you and the Dodge truck,
Yeah.
you can't do that here, or that kind of thing, because otherwise, if it's a recording, after a while people are just gonna just ignore that.
Yeah. Well, I'm
Yeah.
glad to hear you're thinking about using it because I think that's the answer to a whole lot of this stuff is to start really calling people on it. And it seems to me the AI and cameras are a lot cheaper than standing a person out there.
Yeah, the bad thing about that, and that's something that we're taking into consideration is, okay, we got them on video, we got them. Who's going to do the actual, go out there and, and enforce it?
Well,
That's what something that we have to, talk about too.
yeah, but I think the first step is simply calling people out that people think that they're being able to do it secretly and nobody sees them. Yes, in the long run, after a while, they'll know, they'll yell back at the camera and say, "Oh, shut up, you can't do anything for me." But in the beginning, and there's peer pressure. If someone is calling that out and there are other people around, they may say to them, "Yeah, you shouldn't be doing that. You're costing us money or something." It might embolden people along the edges to also bring it to their attention that that's not a good thing to do. I don't want it to lead to shootings over it, like road rage, but it seems to me we need to at least start talking about using some of these new techniques to really get after folks.
Hey, right, Christina, did you have something?
Well, I was going to say, Jose, when you looked into the cameras, though, they were pretty expensive also. I mean, there was some monthly fees that were quite high. And then, I mean, you have to have somebody who's going to monitor them. But, what we have found is there's really no enforcement capability. So, and I mean, I just know that when any of our staff or any of the ward staff have said anything to people in person, they're that it doesn't stop them. So, I don't know. I think people have just become so
Jaded.
emboldened. They just
Unless there's some way to have teeth with the AI, you're probably just gonna have that same problem. We're just gonna know who did it. We're just not gonna be able to do anything about it.
Well, it'd be interesting to see how much peer pressure will do. I mean, I think, individuals, it also depends on who the person is that approaches them. If I go up to them, they'll say, "Oh, get out of my way, little old lady." So it won't do any good anyway. But if a 6'6" guy with a gun on his hip says quit, I think they'll be more interested. So I think that the voice coming over, if it's loud and authoritative, I think can, it's not going to do 100%, but it might stop some of it.
Moving on, I know that we have you guys still waiting on the EV truck. We still haven't received it. I think the last meeting that we had, they tried to drive it out. It was supposed to be delivered, never made it out the gate. So I had
No.
it didn't make it out. I guess they're having an issue with the they're getting a communication error, which is all the system, everything's functioning. But when, because if this thing runs with the computer, you hook it up to the truck or, some way you interact with it, it's not communicating back. It's not communicating back. So right now, it's, the soft they got they have to update the software, and then, they're in touch with the engineering trying to figure out, what is going on exactly with that unit. So we haven't got it back. The good news is that we did receive three new front loads this last week. Last Friday we received three new front loads. Right now we're trying to get them up and running, putting on the decals, getting them and preparing them. We're supposed to the 16th, what is it, June 16th, we have training for the guys because these are a new model type of trucks that we're going to be using. Practically, I mean, they're almost the same like we're using now, but we're going to be getting some training, and hopefully we can get those plates so we can have them out there. Yeah, because we're on the commercial side, we're hurting pretty bad with some of the trucks. just trying to get them fixed. I mean, our equipment is pretty old, so it's just trying to find parts and all. So, but we're getting there. And then also,
okay, that electric truck was what was that, $770,000 or something?
800.
It was, did it come up to 800,000? Okay.
Yeah, it's somewhere around that. I don't know the exact numbers, but it was up there. And it is under warranty. So good things that we're, you know, we're not going to be paying for that. So it is under warranty.
Good. All right. So let's see, a reroute update.
Yeah, rerouting, we've been with the commercial, on the commercial side, we've been looking at all the and all the other accounts. You know, supervisors have been logging on and basically looking at, you know, what are the tonnages that we have, what are the yardage, you know, per route, all that information. We gathered all the information, and to be honest with you, we haven't really worked on it. And that's going to be the residential and the commercial side. We had with the city, you know, doing evaluations, you know, for all the employees, and everything had to get done before next month. So it kind of, you know, hey, let's concentrate on this and then we'll get back to the rerouting. But, you know, right now we're working, you know, as a matter of fact, that is supervisor meeting this morning. You know, we're looking at how do we balance that out, you know, when it comes to the residential and the commercial. We did make some moves. We did notice that, you know, there's some on the commercial side. We did notice that we have some stops that can move to another route, kind of balance them out, you know, when it comes to yardage of on the route. We did make some moves. One of the things, you know, going back to the residential right now, we're just trying to balance those routes out. But I don't have a lot of information. But, you know, like I said, next go around, I'll have maps for you, you know, so I kind of show you what the breakdown's going to be. And because they're also doing with the recycling and the garbage. But next time I'll have some maps for you so we can look at it, or some numbers.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Do you have a question or no? Okay. Let's move on to item 6 for waste diversion. We're going to be looking at the MRF.
Chris, I've got to go ahead and take off. So.
Okay. All right.
Bye, Fred.
Bye. Bye. See you next week.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, let me share my screen. There we go.
So are the tariffs still helping?
Well, you know, we're scheduled to do an audit this past month, and they had some equipment down, and so they called and said, you know, we're not going to be able to do it. Can we just go ahead and use the numbers from the last audit, which, as you know, was very good. So we're still at that 19.6% contamination. So we're still looking at excess residue fees of, you know, about $550. So that's very nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, the numbers have been pretty steady. We've, you know, I don't know why we haven't. Is this the right report, Brittany?
This is what Ernesto directly sent me for this month.
Okay, because we should have had. Yeah, I guess this is right. We don't have May yet. Right. So yeah, so I mean not a whole lot of changes. Tonnages have stayed about the same, a little bit of, you know, price changes, but the
plastics, the HDPE has gone up quite a bit. And the number fives, but the PET was down some.
Why is number
So.
one half of numbers two and five? Why is number one PET at 420 and the other PETs are at 840? So it's just half.
Wasn't there supposed to be some adjustment that they were going to do, if I
They
remember?
did do some adjustments, but they adjusted the invoices so that it made up the difference. In some cases, it affected it, so we owed a little bit, and another month it was they owed us a little bit more. So,
But they're
but.
paying half as much for the PET as they are for
Right.
HDPE and the number fives.
Yeah. So that is actually something that I need to follow up with them on that. I had not noticed it because all along they've been the same.
Right.
So, but I will find out what was going on with that because I'm not sure. And
Your PET's pushing almost 8% now. That's a lot, especially as thin as water bottles are now.
We get a lot of them. Look at that. The total price we get in is 58,000
Right.
on a tonnage.
Now, the glass we got the check from Sibelco this last month was like one of the highest we've ever received. So that's a good thing. But yeah, we are seeing smaller amounts of glass in both the purple bin and at the MRF. We're don't know if people are dropping off less, not as motivated. I don't really know what the issue is. But we're just seeing.
This is audit results from when? From
This was,
February 7th?
yes.
Yeah, so that's right after the holidays, kind of cooled out. So you'll probably see that spike with your next audit.
Yeah, and that won't be till next month. I'm looking for the glass numbers, but that was quite a big difference. Now, I don't have this to show you, but Ernesto did a report looking at the makeup of our recyclables, what we take to the MRF, and over the last 5 years. And in fiscal year 21, 54.5% of what went to the MRF was actually recyclables. 16.2% was glass, and 29.3% was residue. In this fiscal year, 67.6% of what we've sent to the MRF is mixed recyclables. 8.3% is glass. And only 23.9% has been residue.
Good for us.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it really is a good change.
Yeah.
Well, people are getting educated, so that's
So,
good news.
yes.
Christina, is that from the audits? Is that information generated from the audits that we do?
Yes. But that is what Ernesto looked at, all of the information from the last 5 years. And he just looked like at FY21 and then FY25 so far. So it's for FY25, that's the last 10 months.
Could that be because of the change in the equipment that they did?
Mm-hmm. Pardon, Pat?
Could that be because of a change of equipment that they did? They added some optical sorters or anything like that that increased how much recyclables are actually being processed?
It could be. I mean, we were told that some equipment that they added contributed to the reduction in the residue.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're getting more of the PET out, then it's going to drive the residue rate down. And while we were talking about that, I was remembering when the program first started, I think paper was at like 43%, you know, newspaper.
Oh, yeah.
And cardboard was at 14.
Right.
And now with the Amazon effect, look at, you know, cardboard's at 30 and paper's down to 25, you know, percent of the recyclables.
And he's actually put together some reports that I've asked him to, where we're looking at the trends in the different commodities and residue. So if, you know, I'll pull some of those and send them over to you. Just, they're just interesting to see how things have changed.
Good.
So
thinking also
I can remember, I don't know, I can't remember what I did this morning, but I can remember 15 years ago, it took 24 aluminum cans to make a pound. And now it's up to like 36. Because, you know, they're so thin and light.
And I'm just on Clean and Beautiful has a block of aluminum cans that's so heavy that from way, way back. Yeah, they're just not like that anymore at all.
Nope.
I think there's also changing packaging.
Oh, yeah.
So well, that we're seeing, you know, soups coming in little cardboard containers instead of cans. And maybe with the increased tariff on cans, it's going to get even more that way. So it seems to me some of this change, maybe that as well. And we certainly know that newspapers have dropped way down in terms of circulation.
Well,
oh, go ahead.
Cardboard's lighter too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, everything has gotten lighter. It seems like the PET is lighter, the cardboard's lighter. It's all just very different than it was when we started. So,
well, breweries are suffering now. So with aluminum cans.
Well, I mean, you know, I think I've mentioned this before, but the aluminum cans are probably only a, you know, like, what are they? 2% of what we collect, but they're about 70% of the revenue.
Yeah.
So, yeah. They're definitely, if we could get more of them, it'd be great. Okay, any questions? All right.
Okay, let's see. Move on to public outreach.
Christy? Yes. So Brittany put customer service, but this was the survey. And Chris, I saw your email to Carlos.
Oh, okay.
I do believe I mentioned it some time ago because we've been working on it for a while. But I wasn't sure when it was going to go out. Like, I was told by the mailer that it was going to go out later. And so I'm sorry. They told me like Monday that, Oh, we got it out sooner than we thought we were going to get it out. I thought I was going to have time to let you know.
So does everyone get one of those or?
Yes.
Oh, okay, because I haven't.
I haven't gotten one.
Yeah, I haven't gotten one, but I just had a friend email me wondering what was going on.
It's a postcard.
Yeah, okay.
So
I got
it
it yesterday, so y'all might get it today or tomorrow.
Okay.
I didn't get it either, because usually my husband will tell me when that stuff comes. But it was a big mailing. It was 150,000 pieces.
Okay.
So it's just a multiple choice. There is room at the end for comments. I've had a couple of people email me that know me with additional comments. And it was only intended to be online, so people either had to use the QR code or multiple choice. We're hearing today that some people have called and said they don't have a computer or a smartphone, and so we are making arrangements to have a phone line set up so that we can direct people to someone who can ask them the questions and take their responses.
Yeah.
I'll be very interested to know what percentage you find of people who call in who have no phones and no are unable to use the phones that way, have no computers. It's a big issue in people of my age, and so it'll be really fascinating when I hope they'll keep good records of how many come in.
Oh, well, yeah, we will, of course.
I think Chris had sent me the message as well, and as I was thinking about it, I was thinking, oh, you did talk about a customer survey. I think most of us had no idea that it would be a postcard. I think that was the surprise.
Well, the postcard gives you the information to direct you to the survey.
To the
Yeah.
site, okay.
Because usually when I think survey, that means that, people, certain numbers are pulled out of the hat and somebody starts telephoning. But I know that these days is about $150 to $200 to a completed answer. So that gets very expensive. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of return you get on this approach.
Well, since yesterday, we've received 400, 1,450 responses.
Really?
Yes.
Excellent.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow, that's impressive. That will not be $100 a response, probably, though I don't know what the cost was of the overall.
Well, it's not inexpensive, but we don't do it very often.
No, it's a
And
need.
I think it's important. And
Yeah.
the person that reached out to me, just really thought it was, they were pretty happy to see that we are taking the time to ask our customers, how they feel about our services.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
We were one thing that did happen is the customer called me and they were pretty upset because they saw on the survey it made reference to Recycle Coach, the app, and they tried to download it and it didn't have their address in the system, which some occasionally happens. And so he was calling customer service and, over at Water. And they told him that Recycle Coach isn't a city app and they shouldn't download it because it seemed very suspicious.
I depend on it.
Oh my
So
God.
do 65,000 other people.
Jeez.
I think you need to send a message to all
Ya
the
la hace
water
porque
service
ahorita vino
people.
para acá y me comenzó a decir del cerda.
Yeah, we've only been using it. I actually was looking at some old information right earlier today, and only about 15 years.
How many years?
It's like 15.
15 years. Okay.
Something like
really?
That.
12. 15.
Oh,
wait. No, wait. I think
I'm sure she'll work her way around over here también otra vez. So.
Oh, are you talking to us, Jose?
No, I'm sorry. Hold on. I'm sorry.
No, I thought it started, you know, I've been with ESAC for 8 years. I thought it was kind of new.
No, well, it was my waste when it first started.
Oh, okay. No, because I've only had the recycled coach. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
okay.
When we first started, it was my waste.
My waste. Okay.
So, yeah. But, you know, but everything is going well. So it'll be really interesting to see the responses.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see.
Recycling 101. Okay. So we did our Master Recycler program in April. During the month of April, 5 weeks every Wednesday, we had about 7 people complete the program all 5 weeks, an hour and a half every Wednesday. And it went really well. We had restructured the program. We worked with Environmental Education Exchange to develop the curriculum. And so after it was done, they basically collapsed the program so that instead of however many hours, 5 times 90 is they collapsed it into an hour and a half program that we're calling Recycling 101. And they've started offering it to groups, to over at neighborhood centers, to neighborhood associations. Actually, Fred's neighborhood has requested it. They've already scheduled probably 8 starting in May and through June. Some of them are for smaller groups that are limited, and then some others are more like at libraries, so people, you know, multiple, so larger groups can attend.
Okay.
So I went to one of the first ones over at the Casitas on Broadway. It's a senior living center. And they had a lot of questions. And it's great. So that's a new program that we're able to offer. Get more people educated.
Perfect.
And then, you know, summertime's always a much slower time for us, so we don't have a whole lot of other things going on, but we will have a back-to-school bash that we'll be attending at Quincy Douglas. And theirs gets like 3,000 people coming through, kids. It's huge, but it's a lot of fun.
Where is all those backpacks?
Well, they get people to provide the backpacks. We're usually going to be there just giving out pencils, and we have some highlighters and a couple other things, but
orange bags?
Probably not, but we did do the party for the planet, and we were giving out orange bags. So, but that was during April.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. So let's move on to item 8 for future agenda items. Any requests?
We'll put on a brush and bulky update.
Oh, yeah.
A brush and bulky by appointment update.
Okay. Okay.
Now it's slipped out of my mind.
Yeah.
And as a reminder, our waste aversion July meeting is going to be canceled, and next week's full ESEC meeting is canceled. So we
Oh,
the
that's right. June is out.
so the next time ESEC will meet is full ESEC next month in July. So you have a month off.
Okay. All right. And then in July, WDC's not going to be meeting.
Right. That one will be canceled. It's a holiday week that week.
Okay.
Oh, well, even though the drivers aren't gonna be observing the holiday, but some office staff may be out.
Okay. Summertime.
But so with that said, we have a month to create month to create full ESAC. Otherwise, whatever items you're requesting won't be on until August.
Okay. So, do you want us to send stuff to you or just talk about it now or?
If you have ideas, you can throw them out now, or you can email me or text me.
Okay. I'll have to do that.
Matt, did you have something you wanted on the agenda?
I had a question.
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to see if we can actually add. I just talked to Brittany a little bit about it, but if we can add kind of like a deputy director update, for you all that I can maybe give you some information as to what we're looking at in the future, a future MRF, cost of service studies, anything like that,
Okay.
prior to where you meet for full ESEC. I can give a little bit brief update before that, if that would be helpful. If not, that's fine.
Okay, and then there's the talk about raising fees.
Yeah, that would be the cost of service study
Now,
rate.
is that what you're talking about? Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay, because I've had people ask me questions about that, and
Also, wasn't
I
there
haven't heard that.
at the city council meeting or some suggestions in Ulick's newsletter? What was it I sent you, Chris, about raising fees?
Yeah, that's what Pat was talking about.
Is that what it was?
Cost of service. Yeah, because she put that in her newsletter and it kind of caught me off guard. So yeah, we definitely would like a update on that. But they're meeting on that, right? Is mayor and council ha talking about that at the next mayor and council meeting, or do you know,
I
Pat?
think
go ahead, Christine.
Karen had said something about that ES was going to go to the council and
Yeah.
present in like September, wasn't it, Pat?
Okay. Yeah,
It was
that's why I
September. It was
yeah.
September, August timeframe that
Okay.
the EA go back to council. But I think Karen was just mentioning that. I don't think it's formally been put on the agenda or anything at this time, because we'll have more information. We're still pretty early into the cost of service study and waiting to hear back from UGEN. So as soon as we hear more of that information, then we'll be able to share.
Well, how did she find out?
Because we have meetings, we still have meetings. Say we're working on it.
Oh, God. Okay. Okay.
So they're aware that we're doing that we have a consultant working on that right now. So they're aware of it. They don't have any of the information yet.
Okay, but we'll get more. ESAC will get more information.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, because that caught me off guard. All right.
Our job is to keep you guys off guard. That's the
We know that. Yeah.
And we're
The
not here,
script
we're doing a
my
really good
life.
job. We're not here, we're doing a really good job.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
We'll get back to you. No problem. All right. Okay, so I think that's it for future agenda. No call to audience. And at, oh, we're doing right on 4:27. Let's adjourn. So we won't see you next month.
See you later. Can I say something?
Oh, sure.
You guys know because we've asked you, but week after next is Waste and Recycling Workers Week.
Oh yeah, so, we did a. We had Brittany record us at the beginning of this meeting where we were thanking them.
Okay.
Can I send in an individual one?
Great.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You did one. Okay.
And just one note about that: we will have a proclamation at that June 17th meeting.
Oh, at Mayor and Council, or at our, wait.
At Mayor and Council.
Mayor and Council, yeah, okay.
It'll be at 5:30 that afternoon.
Okay, I watched those. I don't know when I'm going to be able to drive, so sorry. I'm not bipedal yet, so.
One of us could pick you up.
Oh, it's too hard for me to get in and out of cars. I can only get in my Subaru, and I don't want to do wheelchairs and stuff. So, but anyhow, we'll see.
All right.
I'm getting there. It's been good. 2 months of not walking, which is no fun. So don't sprain your ankle. I mean, don't break your ankle. So, all righty. Have a good night.
Good night to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye now.
Bye.
Thank you.
I don't know.